how to sell more cars.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the How to Sell More Cars podcast. I'm your host, Terry Lancaster. Got a couple of really special guests today. I'm pretty excited about it because they've both been guests before. Mark the Car Guy was one of the very first guests 5 or 6 years ago when I first began the Get You Some radio show. Kathy Cruz been a guest on there. Micah has been around the car business forever, one of the original social media guys. Kathy wrote the book on using social media in a dealership and creating a culture around that. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about social media. Mike's doing a lot of work in the service department now. And I asked Mike about building better relationships with service customers and maintaining that relationship to help grow the entire business. And I want to talk about their podcast, the First Pencil podcast. And I want to talk about building a culture at the dealership. But first and foremost, we're going to start with the trick question, Kathy. Guilty pleasure. I know y'all are music people. You're always talking about music. Give me your guilty pleasure. That song that always gets your head bopping to get you turning up the radio that you just don't want people to know about.
Gosh, there's nothing that I don't care if people know. If they do, I won't like it. I won't.
Well, give us one that you wouldn't think most people who know your musical taste would think.
There you go.
Huh. I mean, it's got to be punk, right?
I don't know. That seems on brand.
Most people would think of that first.
But most people don't think that about me.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. I mean, let's say, I'd say Sex Pistols, probably.
Sex Pistols.
Yeah, Anarchy in the UK, maybe.
Anarchy in the UK. Well, there you go. Still, I just watched that documentary not too long ago. That was pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. Mike, how about you? Guilty pleasure.
All right. I'll give you one that people that know me would never pin on me. But when I hear the opening intro to this song, if I'm driving in my car or I'm standing here at my desk in my home office, I will start to dance uncontrollably, regardless of who's looking at me or who's around. And that's the song My Mustache from the Sparks.
You know what? I don't know that song. My Mustache. Is that the one in that? Have you seen the commercial, the iPod commercial with the girl with the mustache?
I haven't. No, I don't think so.
I don't even know what it is. It's
if you hear Mustache from the Sparks, you'll recognize it.
Yeah, I hope it's Sparks because now they're very rich.
Yeah.
If they have that song, I'm going to
look that up and I'll try to find you a link of that commercial and I'll post it in the show notes. There's some teenage girl, she's listening and she noticed she's got some hair growing above her lip. And instead of going all nuts, she leans into it, styles it, and just dances and it's doing it completely. It's a very colorful video.
But I've been a fan for 30 plus years of the Sparks, so I've discovered it first.
Well, all right, Mikey, I was just telling you, you've been doing some new things. Tell us what you're doing now, career-wise, in the dealerships. What are you doing every day in dealerships?
I am still with DealerBuilt, the DMS company. Right. I stepped out of the auto industry from the showroom to the vendor world in 2018. I initially started with DealerBuilt as an account manager, so I was traveling all over the country, going into stores that use our software, trying to, you know, help them increase their efficiency with the product, get better with it. Now I've transitioned kind of into sales and marketing. So moving forward, when you're on LinkedIn and you see a post from either DealerBuilt or our marketing division, which is Vista Dash, that's probably me that crafted it. So having some fun with that.
So you're behind the scenes. You're the Wizard of Oz behind their branding.
We'll see. Yeah. I don't know about Wizard, but yeah, I'm the little man in the hidden room.
All right. Kathy, tell us what you're up to these days.
I am not so much in the digital space as much as I moved it to more doing operational and financial related consulting. It's where most of my expertise lies. I just needed a change and wanted to go back to what I know the most about and enjoy that more than where I was.
Well, you and I were just chatting about that a little bit before we got cranked up here. And so tell us about about the obstacles that you see in the path on the digital retailing side and the social media side and some of the stuff that you said, I'm tired of fighting that fight now. I want to fight a different fight. But what is not happening that you you think should be happening?
Well, I think it comes back to no training, which, if I can say the root cause of it, there's just not a cohesive training around anything with digital retail. And there might be a training here and a training there, like maybe a sales training, but nothing that encompasses the experience that customers expect and that the world is doing now.
Yeah. Right. The world, everyone's doing this, but car dealers, you think?
No, I don't think it's that black and white, but it's, yeah. I've always been someone that wanted to make the most profit at a store. And if you're running things well, and if you're, team is trained and they're supportive of each other and they have a good culture, then you're going to make more money. Right. So, I think that's the biggest, there's a handful of people that are doing social and digital well, but, digital is changing as well. Social is changing and Google is changing and everything is changing. So some have completely missed the train on all of it.
Yeah.
So. But it's not too late to jump in.
Well, I think it's not too late because there's going to be something new. It might be tomorrow. It might be next week. It might be 6 months now. Mike and I talked about this. He sold cars on LinkedIn accidentally, and then he was all on Google Plus, and now there's not a thing as Google Plus. And then Google Business is super powerful, and Facebook as a connection tool has been super powerful. But everything's in flux. Where do you think the power is sitting right now?
It's still with the big ones, but I think that this idea of everyone can be everything to everyone, and where social media is just this big open forum, I think it's now going back to, you could say an echo chamber, but I really think it's communities that are like-minded and getting people around your particular, like if you, when you're on social, there's so much infighting and outrage going on that it's exhausting being in it. And so that's the open forum idea, which worked great when it started, right. But not anymore. So now it's more rolling back to a community of people that just have, the same, that align with the things that you align with, whatever that may be.
Yeah. I think
focusing more on email.
Yeah. Too. You're focusing more on email. Have you found that email? Well, and I think that's part of what I want to talk to Mike about is building this recurring community. I think it goes back to what marketing has always been most effective at, and that's in preaching to the choir. That's getting that group of people and finding out who your customers are and hugging them closely. How are dealers doing that in the service department now, Mikey?
I think. For me, I spent 35 years in dealerships. My first job at a store was as a tune-up tech. I was a tune-up and drivability tech. So service is kind of where I started. And for so long, the truth is dealerships really praised the sales department. Everybody lived and breathed, worshiping those sales guys up front. And the back end of the store or fixed stops kind of got ignored. But now in the last couple of years, we've really seen kind of a turnaround. People are starting to keep their cars longer and longer and longer than ever. Dealerships are realizing that it's really the fix-ops departments that support the store, that drive the store. Sales is flashy, it's romantic, it's shiny, but it's the guys that are really, in the back, turning wrenches, keeping those customers' cars on the road that really keep the store moving. So now we're starting to see a shift on attention from the dealership standpoint. And we've seen a lot of technologies emerge and companies helping not only market service departments, but increase the customer experience in the service drive. There's a handful of companies that are doing some great things with photo and video enabled MPI or multi-point inspections to get that communication to the customer in the format that they're accustomed to using, texting. Nobody answers a phone call anymore. Nobody. So when a service advisor is calling a customer to say, hey, we saw that your car could use brakes while you're here. We can still get it done in your estimated time of completion if you let me know in the next 5 minutes. that message never gets heard. But if you text that customer and show them a picture, no matter what that customer is doing, they're going to stop, answer that text. Hey, let's go ahead and get those done. Let's get the vehicle finished up. Send them a mobile bill payment option. They can scan their credit card, get it all done. You know, these are the things that people are used to, like Kathy was saying earlier. The world exists like that. You know, we used to say that the second biggest purchase you make is a car, right? Well, what's the first biggest? A house. You can go online and with a number of apps get approved for a home loan for $500,000 in 15 seconds. Why can't you do that with a car?
Yeah. And you can get approved for a loan and they will come to your house and give you $500,000 at your kitchen table. And you can just and do it all there, you know, in your house robe. You can do $1 million deal, but I got to go to the dealership to buy a $25,000 car. So someone told me
after I spent time online looking at the car, finding the car I want, when I go to the dealership, now I got to start all over again.
Yeah,
I got to start with the basic meet and greet process. I got to go out and look at three or four other cars before. No, this is just the car I want. Can you catch up to me? I'm already at the starting line. I'm already at the finish line. Yeah. You know, meet me where I'm at, not make me start at the line again.
Well, and going back to the service and preaching to the choir, those people who are coming into the service department and our competition isn't the dealership down the street. Our competition is every other person our customers are giving money to, every other person that's competing for our customers' money and attention. And so we're competing with them. But those service customers, they're the ones that are coming back because service customers are the new car buyers. They've got new cars. They're servicing their new cars. They're in warranty. They're the most likely to be buying the new cars. What can dealers be doing to really grab on to those high potential buyers and bring them back again with referrals?
Make their visit as quick and efficient as possible. Like you said, competition. Dealership service departments aren't competing with the dealership across town service department. They're competing with the Jiffy Lube and the Valvoline quick service stores that are right on the corner across the street from that dealership. You know, customers can pull right in to use the Valvoline, hate to use a name brand, but use the Valvoline example. You can pull right in, drive over a pit. You don't even have to get out of your car. There's complete touchless experience. They'll scan the VIN. It's almost like going through a pit stop in a NASCAR race because you got people down beneath, you know, calling out left front tire, checking the air pressure, you know, oil, 5 quarts. They call it out as they go along. You're in and out in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, right? I keep telling service managers, the best thing you can do to see and evaluate your customer experience for your drive is take the next trade-in that you get, take some petty cash or cash out of your pocket and go have it serviced down the street at Jiffy Lube. See what that experience is like from the customer standpoint. When you come back, you'll approach your service drive in a complete different perspective.
Because feel it from their level. The Kathy, what are the big impediments that I hear when I'm talking to dealers about instilling a culture that is more customer centric, that is more focused on the customer's needs than in the process that maybe the dealership has set up, whether it's on service or on the sales side? There's always this mismatch between what the uppers say they want and what is actually in existence, even the two don't always connect. What's the biggest impediment keeping them from connecting, you think?
Lack of training, lack of openness, transparency, culture. It's not one particular thing, but it's also just a willingness to change a little bit because there isn't any change happening. And I guess training, and I don't mean to say that there is such a thing out there, but I believe there should be training that's more holistic around where a person's, like what we used to do at the dealership I managed. So we were part of a larger auto group, but we had managers meetings pretty regularly. And we would go over things like the financial statement, maybe the balance sheet, the financial statement. And then the next week we'd go through maybe the report that comes from service or parts, or so that everyone could understand what everyone else's job, how it worked all together. And it brings a more cohesive approach to things, and people, you know, it builds camaraderie too, but also just a way to support each other. And I don't see any of that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't see that happening.
Well, part of it is the turmoil that's in everything with turnover, with maintaining employees, with recruiting employees. Everybody has trouble. Techs are like the goose that laid the golden egg. If you can find a decent tech that you can hang on to, but everyone, and then there's not much longevity anywhere. And where there's no longevity, there's no accumulation of cultural knowledge. And where there's no accumulation of cultural knowledge, there's no buildup of culture. So it's like the...
Okay, so I can tell you one thing about longevity, to how to keep employees. Make them happy.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to make them happy? Because they only want to make your customers happy. But if you make them miserable, the opposite happens. So yes, the turnover's terrible. Yes, it's hard to find good people, especially techs. But when you have a good person, you find a good group of people, treat them well, pay them well, and they'll stay. And I'm living proof of that. We had it in every level, from management down to porters, salespeople, you name it, we had it. And it's because we just had those simple, they're simple, but they're difficult to achieve, I think. But they're simple tenets of just treating people right and paying them well and make them feel good when they come to work. I know I'm laughing. It's not funny. It's just absurd that we're still talking about this in 2023.
Well, I mean, it seems strange that treating people like people is an unusual and revolutionary idea. But everyone's so caught up in all kinds of numbers, and the numbers start cascading down, and everything starts becoming a color by numbers outfit, and everyone forgets to treat people like people. And Mike and I, it goes back to, he was on the very first episode, one of the very first episodes of the podcast, and he said this thing that I still rings true in my head today, that the secret of social media is actually being social. And
right there in the name.
Yeah, it's right. It's right there in the name, and the secret to building a community is actual treating people like people. These are all truisms, but things keep changing so much. What's social media? Let's step above building the internal community. How do we go and strengthen that external community? How do we keep that strong? What can the bosses do to keep it strong and then help their people keep it strong?
External community, meaning people that aren't on social?
Well, external people who don't work at the dealership, the customers, the community at large. How do you get that community feeling with the people who are your people's people?
I don't know how to get the masses to like you, but I know how to get the customers to like you.
Yeah.
The masses maybe have to go to advertising, but you know, we know what car dealership advertising looks like. So there's never an attempt to do that. It's more just all about the car. Let's sell the product. Here's the product. Here's the options. Here's the price. Here's the this. It's always about the folks on the product, not on where you buy.
Right.
And again, there's a few outliers out there that do focus on where you buy. That's important. But by and large, that's not the case. It's more like they just want to just give you all about the car and nothing about where you're buying it from.
Well, they want to give you about the car, and they want the deal to be about the deal. And I've been producing radio and TV commercials since the dawn of the radio and television era. So it's always like that. But there are things you can do to stick in. There are other benefits that the customer are looking for than just price. There might, like Mark talked about, the speed. That's one of my biggest things. We're going to get you in and out fast. The speed of the process, the boosting the likability factor is something that the advertising can do and the people can do. But I think it starts with how you treat your people.
Yeah,
people still like new cars. That's the thing that drives us even to this day. You know, I'm 1 year into a new vehicle purchase, and when I go out and I look at that truck sitting in my driveway, I actually just love it. And that's the part we need to insert into every aspect of what we're doing. People like new cars. They like to drive them. They like to show them off. They like to share them with their friends. No one likes the process of getting that new car. So that's the bridge we need to build, is getting a customer from wanting that new car to driving that new car easier, faster, more efficient, like you said, in and out. The process needs to be streamlined. That's what we need to be authentic in sharing with customers out there, that we're here to help you get into the car that you already want. We're not here to sell you the car. You already want it. we're going to make this process quick and simple so you can start enjoying it.
And then help them understand how service, what value there is in coming back for service, you know, just being connected to the store more. There's a huge disconnect there, and there's so much opportunity, but no one ever, I don't see a lot of people trying to work it. Like that's what I was saying about taking a holistic approach to it.
Thea, I think people love the car business so much that it becomes in the culture at large, it's one of the flashpoints now. EVs are a cultural flashpoint. They're, you know, the automobile business is having a moment in the cultural zeitgeist where it may not look the same 5 or 10 years down the road, and political parties are lining up behind it, and people are lining up behind it. Where does that fit into the dealership management level? That has to be a huge concern for everyone, and at the process level, EVs are changing the process.
Well, I just finished writing 4 articles for Ernst & Young. They did a mobility study, and they found that digital retailing and the tenants around it, and the training and the language around it, language between salespeople and customers, it's being driven by electric vehicle customers. So another, you know, kind of nudge to introduce training or just concepts and kind of improve the experience. But we'll see if that happens. I hope it does.
Well, at that level of digital retailing is being driven by the EV transition, mm-hmm. and the EV transition is in part being driven by the manufacturers. And there's this disconnect between the dealership versus the manufacturers, because EV is an end around 100 years of franchise mm-hmm. laws. Mm-hmm. What are the bosses in the big chairs thinking about that?
Right. Like it's a threat, you know, yeah. It's the old, the SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. That's the biggest threat there is.
Yeah.
people to take action around it. I think also I could say that there's a lot of vendors creating a lot of noise. So it makes it more confusing and you don't know what to do. And so, right. You don't do anything.
Right.
The website providers that are the preferred vendors are just not great. And I mean, yeah. So there's obstacles, right? You have to be very diligent about what your plan is and what your strategy is to be able to make the money that it's going to, you know, to make money to stay profitable and stay away from the threat of the factory taking all your business.
I always say the robots are coming. I mean, like I said, whether it's the EV robots or the AI now, I mean, if someone right now is sitting at a computer trying to train an AI to do computer to drive them to a digital retail transition form, and whichever dealership group kind of gets that worked out first, they got a pretty big advantage.
And there are plenty that are real close. There are plenty of vendors that are close. You know, every day we get closer and closer to fully intelligent two-way communications that are completely AI driven. We're close now. I mean, there's a number of vendors that are offering chats and, you know, even calculating email responses on the fly based on the customer's inquiries. And it's getting pretty crazy out there.
It is nuts, and it keeps moving faster. But the thing that never changes, and what I tell everyone is your superpower and your dealership superpower, and the thing that drives it together is your humanity, your ability to connect with human people, with other people in the community on a one-to-one level and a larger level. You guys have dipped your toes into the broadcasting arena. Tell us about the First Pencil podcast.
The First Pencil kind of came up just on a conversation Kathy and I had during COVID. We started having kind of a regular conversation just as a way to stay connected and, you know, talk to another human. You know, we're all stuck behind computers on Zoom meetings and conference calls and such. And we just really just didn't want to lose that personal touch. So we started having regular conversations, a lot of time to, you know, share a joke or vent some frustration about the car business, because we both have such a passion for this industry, or just talk about something, you know, musically. And one day Kathy actually said, you know, we talk about a lot of, you know, kind of big ideas and a lot of things that other people could probably get some use out of, because we end up, you know, talking about tricks of the trade and things that can help increase efficiency. Just, you know, if I was at a dealership, I would share with her something that I came up with, or she would say, you know, with one of the controller things that she's doing, something going on in accounting. So we would inevitably share things that other folks could benefit from. She said, we always just think about doing a podcast. I'm not a podcast person, I'll be honest with you. I didn't even listen to very many. Kathy is like the podcast queen. She's always recommending podcasts, but I'm just not into it. But I said, let's do it. And now we've got over 60 episodes, well over 1,000 downloads, you know, and we've had some really interesting guests on that are in automotive. We try to keep it automotive based. And then we finish up with a little palate cleansing, and we'll talk about something musical, because we both have an incredible shared passion for music as well.
Yeah. Kathy, you've done some other things, but what's great about the podcast for you?
It gives me a way to present my thoughts in a different way. Cause you know, I've blogged for a long time, and I'm just running out of steam in that world. And Google doesn't pay much attention to smaller companies that have popular blogs, even mine that's been around for a long time. So I could kind of see the writing on the wall. Not that I don't want to write anymore. I mean, I still will. It's just, I just saw it as a different way to express myself that maybe, you know, and I honestly thought, yes, like Mike said, it's just, we have our conversations, and I'm sure people have the same frustrations that we do about certain things. And also that they might want to, like, we've been through it. We both of him and I are both car business veterans, and we've seen a lot. So we thought maybe we could have, you know, some impact that way.
Well, I'm not really a podcast person either, Mike. And I'll be honest with you, I've produced a lot more podcasts than I've ever listened to. I've listened to a couple, but when I'm in my car, I do listen to some. But there's so much content out there, and then as a content creator, I write content and I produce content. So there's always content overload. The great thing about this, the How to Sell More Cars podcast for me, is that, and the same thing I've been doing for the last 5 years. It started out is kind of this content plan. Ooh, I'm going to build this thing. And then I decided, well, I don't really much care about building a thing. I'm more interested in having these conversations, and I get to have great conversations with interesting people. And I inevitably learn 10 times more than I knew going in about things that I hadn't planned to learn about. And I think that's the benefit of something like this. And it you know, not to beat a dead horse, but it boils down to people, because, you know, as many times as I asked ChatGPT, we're never going to get to the same point where we can talk about the Sex Pistols documentary. So the way it is, guys, any last words before we head out? We keep it quick.
Thank you so much, Ben. It's been a pleasure catching up with you.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, brother. Kathy, you, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. It's been awesome.
All right. I love y'all. I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you, everything you do to push the business toward the way maybe where it could be better. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.